condition, my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, mostly it's Tyson Jacks. I thought I was just from my web on the board. S&P futures up 1150. NASDAQ futures up 48. Dow futures up 104, which is, I'm going to say, a little surprising, because yesterday when we were doing the show, we were talking about futures up $95 and the Dow up like 900 or 800 or some massive number. As the day wore on, we closed actually down on the day. Just to review, if you didn't see anything since you saw the show or listened to the show yesterday morning, Dow actually ended up down 26 points, NASDAQ down 25, and the S&P down 4. So it was a pretty serious slide down yesterday, pretty much all day long. We were up, you know, at some one point like, you know, 4%, 5%. So it's a big move to close down on the day. Not exactly sure why that happened. Maybe we were up a little too much the day before. Kevin, how are you? You going to tell us why that happened?
Good morning. I'm doing fine.
I just get this feeling, Kevin, is that when this thing is all over, are we going to have absolutely zero faith in leadership at every level? Or what are we doing here?
Now we're every level. Yeah, pretty much. I think so. Yeah.
Now we're accusing the WHO of causing the whole problem. Does anybody?
Well, the WHO is complicit.
They're
either incompetent or corrupt. You can pick one, but those are the only explanations I can have for some of their stuff.
I don't know how to even quantify this, Kevin. And if I went, somebody stuck me on national TV, I wouldn't even really know how to say it, but. Something, is there anybody that has to have more intel in China than we do with the amount of factories and so forth we have over there? What do we need the WHO to tell us that the whole section of their country has got problems with a disease? Well, why shouldn't our intel be?
Well, yeah, we should have intel, but at the same time, but regardless, even if we had perfect intel and didn't rely a bit on anything the WHO said, then you have to ask yourself, you know, why? What are we funding them to do if they can't get anything right?
We also refuse to use a scenario.
I don't care. They're just they've just proven themselves to be kind of a useless organization.
Well, they came up
throughout
with
this whole situation.
Didn't they come up with a test that our guys refused to use, and then everybody else has used their test and has been doing pretty fine with it, or something?
Refuse to use isn't the right word. The what do we call them? Center for Disease Control, CDC, said they could do it.
Yeah.
So you know, they didn't believe, you know, like you said, all levels of government, right?
Yep.
Doesn't matter.
Why? How do people... I was talking to Maddie on the way in, and my attorney buddy Greg was giving me the story last night that... And I don't know if this is totally accurate, but so you're probably more on it than I am. I should have researched before I said something, but we just fired the guy who's the Secretary of Navy now, right? We, the Trump gang, and we just fired the commander of the Theodore Roosevelt. Now, to get to be a captain of a frigate aircraft carrier, we're talking about a very serious guy reaching the top of a pretty intense pyramid, wouldn't you say? I'm not saying he's a genius or not. I'm just saying it's pretty tough to get that spot. And so he writes a letter. Because he doesn't appear in his mind, who knows right or wrong, that he's getting any kind of help from the Navy saying he's got all kinds of COVID-19 cases on his ship. So the letter gets out, becomes a big brouhaha in the press, so the Navy has to pull him into Okinawa and do something, right? So they do. So they fired a guy because he left the chain of command with the letter, or should have known that the letter was going to get out, and he didn't stay in the chain of command, and that's no good. Whenever anybody finds out what's going on inside the little house, even though the little house is America, right? Not that everything in the Navy should be public knowledge, but, I mean, usually, Kevin, the things people hide, well, what would you guess? Out of all the things in the world that are top secret, like 80% of them or 70% of them are there to not embarrass somebody, they really shouldn't be top secret. Anyway, so then the Secretary of Navy comes out and gives a speech to a bunch of enlisted people or something along these lines, and he starts calling the guy a bunch of names and what an idiot he was, and that's why he fired him. So now this guy, if you're saying how dumb the other guy was for not thinking the letter was going to get out, didn't somebody tape his speech or something?
Yeah, because nobody would ever record your words when you're doing a speech.
No.
That never happens.
I mean, I read this and I'm going, good Lord, where do we find these people? And then I had to listen to, I didn't have to, but I have to because that's my job, man. Then I had to listen to, I know a lot of people here that call in during the day. They're trying to get one of these small business loans. Every single spot is totally jammed up. Nobody's paperwork hasn't gone through anywhere of anybody I know of. The federal group has changed the paperwork like a couple of times. And on top of everything else, Wells Fargo comes out and says, we're not doing any of these loans unless you take the shackles off us you put on us because we were bad boys, a few years ago with all the other stuff, and evidently they put additional restrictions on Wells Fargo. So they come out and say, this is when you know a bank is too big, Kevin.
Well, yeah, Wells Fargo had two times after that first scandal about opening the accounts without customers knowing it. I think the second one had something to do with insurance tied to loans or
something like that.
But they got slapped down again.
So now they say
deserved everything they got.
Well, but now they're saying we're not going to process. That's the definition of being too big, Kevin. That's when Air Force One should be used for the president to drop in and say, we're going to start by everybody on this board resigning, and we're going to go from there. By the way, I think you guys are bigger. Isn't there a law that says you can't be more than 10% of all the deposits in the country, and aren't they like 14 or something?
Yeah, I don't know their number on that.
But, I mean, we're going to start there. How far are we going to go before you guys do what you're supposed to do? I mean, somewhere along the line, somebody's got to crack the whip on these people.
Well, and in the case of Wells Fargo, you have to sit here saying, what is wrong with you people? That even though they've replaced some of the leadership, can you not just sit, is there no inclination to change the culture in that organization?
They are bigger, these banks think they are bigger than the government. And you know what, Kevin, they are. Well, we'll see how these guys make out, but I bet they make out fine. And then I had to listen to the president, whatever, talk for an hour yesterday about everybody's getting their loan, the checks are in the mail, and then they've already dispersed billions of dollars, so much so that they got to go get some more. Kevin, I don't know if anybody's got a check that's even made it through stage one of the paperwork. Unless there's some secret bank in Washington where all these guys are going and getting their loans, there won't be any money left for anybody else. But I don't hesitate to say that that's not happening. But any other bank that I know of, so I called. I heard this going off somebody at Harris, and I know somebody at Lakeside. I call over and I said, my clients are telling me that Harris is having trouble getting this stuff out. And the lady from Lakeside says to me, we're having the same problem. Thing keeps changing. We thought we would be able to apply this week. It turns out not really. So, I mean, how does either the president is a total BSer, which,
you think, huh?
But, I mean, still, why not? He must have said it 10 times, Kevin. Does he not know? Doesn't care? I mean, but people got to. There are people that believe the man, or don't care, or say, "Well, that's just the way he is."
Well, and I don't know if he's believing nonsense that he's getting from other people. If he doesn't translate very well, or if I suspect he's making it up as he goes, or if he's just intentionally lying about it. I don't know. Maybe he is intentionally lying about it because he believes he can get away with it. But it's so easy to disprove. It would be hard to believe anybody's that foolish. Nevertheless, one of the play here is the John Wooden had a coaching concept where he'd say, hurry, but don't rush. This is also rushed. It's going to be a cluster bleep. It's going to be. There's no avoiding it. And, you know, the people in Washington just, they don't understand it. The politicians don't understand it. They want to push it out the door, and they want it to happen tomorrow. And government just doesn't move that fast.
You think, I don't know how you stop this, Kevin, but I get this nervous twitch every time people make decisions where they're set up differently than people that don't. Matter of fact, this weekend, not gonna say who or where or whatever, but I was with a small group, not more than 10. And people were talking about, you know, why are people bitching about the lockdown and stuff? And, you know, you shouldn't do this when you're socializing. But I said, hey, whoa, come on. So I've been listening to this for two glasses of wine. Everybody at this table is still working and is still getting paid. Your point of view on this is totally skewed compared to other people who are home, have a business, watching it go down the rat hole, or are not getting paid. I said, the decisions you make are decisions that are fine for you. You're all fine. To a certain extent, I'm fine. I'm working. My clients, we're trading as much as we normally would do. So it's not a, I mean, and I get the feeling that every person making these decisions about people staying in their house and avoiding people and so forth are all getting paid. They're all governors. They're all city workers. They're all state workers. Nothing's changed for them, Kevin. It's like making war decisions knowing you can't go fight and you'll never get shot. At some point, those decisions, unless you're in the military where you've come up that way and you've seen enough of it where you detest war, like a Colin Powell, George Marshall, those kinds of people, you don't have to worry about it because they detested war because they were in it. And but once you start getting near to wells, making these kinds of decisions, and what they used to call them in Vietnam, the chicken hawks?
Post-Vietnam, yeah.
The stuff is skewed. This guy in New Jersey wants to shut things down, what, to the end of June now? I mean, come on, man. I mean, there's going to come a time when the population is going to see hospitals with empty beds saying, if I get it, there's a spot for me. I got to get back to work. I'll take my chances. I mean, we're not there yet. I'm not saying you should do that today. But I think there's going to come a time when people are going to say, and you're going to see it. I went by the forest reserves on Sunday. I drove back from Audrey's. Every forest reserve was jammed, Kevin, with people with cars, not sitting around, you know, having a powwow. People walking, people fishing far enough apart. You can't cabin fever everybody. And now yesterday, this thing with the African-Americans in Chicago, and what percentage of the deaths have been African-Americans? All you hear about is Northwestern and their ventilators and blah, 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 getting up from those people. And yet, Kevin, it's been obvious to you and me now for, what, 10 weeks, and Mr. Weber as well, the places that have the most deaths are the places where there have two or three generations living in the same home and you send people home.
That people just live so close together,
right,
that they can't avoid each other.
Right. So when you say to somebody, the whole concept of telling somebody to go home and not saying, by the way, what's home like? Hey, I got a 5,000 square foot apartment. It's just me and the dog. Well, then go home. You know, I live with my four grandparents, my parents, and nine kids. Well, maybe you shouldn't go home, you know. I don't know how it can be universal for everybody. Can you?
Well, it can't be, and it doesn't even need to be. That's the crazy part. Even where I live, incidence is pretty low. Now you move over into Berrien County, closer to the lake, where New Buffalo and up to St. Joseph and that area, Berrien County has more cases, and they probably need to do more. But there's also there's more retirees over there. There are more. It's a somewhat older population in general, and we have all of you Illinois people who own homes over there and probably brought it to us.
Yes,
it's all your fault.
What do you suppose the testing in?
By the way, they are trying to keep people from coming over.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Chicago to camp out at their summer places.
What What do you suppose the testing, hospitalization, preparedness protocol is in a place like Berrien County, of which there's got to be 100,000 of them in the U.S.?
I don't know. I think medical care is pretty good over there. So, and there's we have a fair amount of hospital capacity in the area. I don't know how it measures up to what the, you know, what the pandemic need might be. That's a good question, and I don't know the answer. But as I look over here, you know, we have the Lakeland system, and we have two big systems in South Bend too, St. Joseph Health, and I'm trying to remember the name of the other one. But there, again, healthcare is an emphasized industry in Indiana anyway for general growth, and then also in the area we have a lot of medical equipment manufacturing, and so there's some healthcare industry that's built around that too.
Well, I, you and Frank and everybody, the rest of the gang, we've been kind of going back and forth because one of the themes of the show lately has been that one person that I see on TV, mayor, governor, POTUS, his guys around him, certainly not, what's his name, Fauci, who wants to keep everybody in jail until the last germ is passed. I don't see anybody with any sort of a plan on how to get this stuff back together again, do you? Cuomo talked a little bit about it yesterday.
I heard somebody yesterday mention that they have some kind of task force for how do we get it back going, but I'd have to do a little research. Yesterday's, you know, Tuesday is my really busy day because I have a 6 o'clock class that I have to, and I have to be ready for it, plus all my other stuff. So, you know, I really didn't look at it, you know, and I apologize for that because I hate to bring things up and say I haven't had a chance to look into it. I should bring things up when I've had a chance.
What do you mean? You could be governor. You could be governor or mayor or president.
I could be governor, yeah. Well, yeah, if I could be a politician, that would be different. Then I could just say whatever I want.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Cuomo was talking yesterday about he definitely would be looking to get a whole bunch of the antibody tests. That would be if he had a bunch of those, he could start putting people back to work. I think it's going to come down almost to building by building. I'm in downtown Chicago, so I mean, I got to believe that the Board of Trade building or 175 West Jackson or somebody is going to say we're going to have four people there tomorrow morning, send 25 from every firm and you're going to have to wait in line and somebody's going to get a test. You either have it or you don't have it. If you have it, go home or wherever you got to go. Go to the hospital. Go isolate yourself. If you don't have it, go to work. By the way, we're going to test you again in 2 days or 3 days in case somebody just gave it to you. And if you have the antibody, go to work and you're good. I mean, I don't see how. To me, that would be one way of doing it. I'm not saying it would be the best, but it would certainly help out, right?
Yeah, it would. Because we have to get people back to work.
Yeah.
We can't do this. The carnage already is going to be long-term, and I think there's too many people that have it in mind that, hey, when we lift the ban, everything's going to go back to normal. It won't. It's going to be a long haul to get there.
What do you think about the fear factor in people? Are people going to be ready to fly a plane tomorrow? I mean, they're talking about restaurants
not at first. There's going to be some people who say, I'm just going to go ahead, but it's going to be it's actually going to be like any other adoption process. The early adopters are going to do it, the risk takers, and then other people are going to shy away from it and hold on until it appears to be 100% safe. There's also going to be at-risk people with heart conditions and history of respiratory issues, who are going to say, I may never get on a plane, or I may not get on a plane until until it's been proven safe for 2 years or something like that. So it's going to take time. It's not going to go right back to normal.
Well, Kevin, if you had a timeline, I mean, both of you guys, whatever. I've been wrong a bunch on this, as I've learned. I've adapted, shall we say. Evolved about my thinking. We had a situation where I honestly believe if we would have spotted it first, we would have shut some people down. We would have had some, airplanes certainly from there. We would have had more tests at the airport, and we would have maybe had a way where we would certainly had a way to go find people. If there were hot spots like Seattle or someplace, we would have hunkered people down there maybe quicker, especially in the areas where people were, and we would have done this an awful lot differently. Instead, I think we let the genie totally out of the bottle. Then with total mass hysteria, we started clamping down on people, not even realizing they were clamping people down who had it with people who don't, which was pretty ignorant. But there's almost a class warfare there. As long as you stay away from me, it's okay. But so we did that, and now we've got everybody totally hysterical. I mean, I've talked to people, young people, what are you doing? Where's your mask? Hey, for 6 months I've been telling me I don't need a mask. I don't have it. So I'm not going to give it to somebody else. Okay, whatever. And if I did, if I had it, I wouldn't be out. Let's put it that way. So now we have mass hysteria all over the place, and now it looks like it's not going to be as bad as the mass hysteria. Certainly, it's bad if you got a family member or anything like that. And we've had a couple friends of ours, Kevin, and it's, especially at our age, it's not an easy thing to work through. So I'm absolutely not downplaying this at all. I mean, I know that. I don't want it at my age. I mean, for God's sake. And but now the hysteria is probably ahead of the disease. How the hell are we going to all of a sudden in 3 weeks say it's okay to start going back to work? I mean, we've managed to mismanage this all the way through. How the hell are we going to do the next one properly? I don't even know how to bring it back. What are you going to tell people? There's no way that we're going to put people back to work while the chances of somebody getting it are zero. The chances are still going to be there. They're going to be less, and it's maybe summertime makes it even more less, although I don't know if that's true. But it's not going to be zero. So how exactly are we going to introduce that into this massive bad decision-making all along the way?
Well, and how much of it requires us to admit to bad decisions?
Well, that'll never happen. That will zero never happen.
And you know, once again, I just sort of go back to the process issues. If you're not prepared in the first place and you're making it up as you go, then your mistakes are untested. You don't have time to test, so you just do. And so sometimes you're going to do some really dumb things or some things that just don't work, whether they're stupid or not. You'll sort of say, well, it seemed like a good idea when we did it.
Yeah.
Or there were good reasons for doing it that way. It just didn't work. But you know, we go back and say we've been almost 20 years of Homeland Security that is supposed to be prepared for this. And I think I sent you an article about, you know, George W. Bush wanted to, put together a pandemic task force because he was he had identified it as a significant threat to the United States, and they started working on protocols that died on the vine. When we look at something simple like we didn't replenish the masks after the H1N1, and they depleted the government supply of masks, and it never got replaced. You know, that was Obama administration, but I'm not blaming. I'm not stopping the blame there, because if anybody was sounding the alarm about it and it got ignored by people in the Obama administration, does anybody think they stopped sounding the alarm when the Trump administration came along? I doubt it. So no. Either we had people not sounding the alarm and they were oblivious to it, or they gave up, or it fell on deaf ears, or somebody put this in the budget to do replacements and it got kicked out? Did somebody do requisitions and they got denied? I'd really love to know the story on that.
Kevin, I'm going to say the money was in there.
This is your argument against government being responsible for anything, because they can't. They're incapable. At least in the United States, they're incapable of doing it well.
If anything here, I mean, very seldom do I say something I think people really should pay attention to. But this I believe they should. And Maddie, tell me I'm nuts, but the problems we have is everybody's fighting right versus left, you know, red versus blue, whatever the hell it is. The problems we have transcended probably five presidents of each kind. The bureaucracy somehow, it's just like in the state of Illinois when we passed some kind of a law that said you're supposed to get rid of the tollway, or whatever, the people who paid the tolls after 90 days or whatever. It doesn't ever happen, Kevin. I'm going to go take you one step further. I'm going to say the money got spent and we still don't have the masks.
Oh, yeah, I don't doubt that for a second.
Now, that, if that's happening, you know, up and down the chain.
We saw that. That was clearly evident when we did the 2009 stimulus.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we discovered that Shovel Ready wasn't as shovel ready as we thought, that's fine. I get that. I get that when what we thought we could mobilize and do real quickly didn't happen. But do you think we didn't spend the money? Of course we spent the money. It just, God knows where it went.
Well, if people allegedly in wartime if a national sport is stealing from the government, we got to change that somehow. SP futures up 19, NASDAQ futures up 69. This is after being way up yesterday and finishing down. Hopefully that doesn't happen again today. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
That's the way that the world goes round.
A lot to lose. He's a pretty nice fella, kinda confused. Got muscles in his head, ain't never been used. Thinks he owns half of this town. Starts drinking heavy, gets a big red nose, beats his old lady with a rubber hose. Then he takes her out to dinner, buys her new clothes. That's the way that the world goes down. That's the way.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hawley, Mr. Matt Weber. Matty, who was that? Mr. John Prine?
John Prine, yeah, who passed away last night of complications with COVID-19. And, of course, Chicago legend, the Maywood Mailman, as he's known.
Well, we got a bunch of people drinking at home. I hope we're not beating their old ladies with a rubber hose. Or them whacking the guy with a frying pan either. I guess that's just as bad.
Yes.
Whatever. It's a lot of that going. Anyway, hopefully not very much of that going. S&P futures up 15. NASDAQ futures up 59. The Dow futures up 198. Actually, I think they're less than that, 150. We had this one has a DAX up, down 68.7%. These guys closed before we sold off yesterday afternoon, of course. FTSE down 57, 1%. CAC round down 52, 1.2. It's hard to keep up when one guys are trading and the other guys aren't. Nikkei up 403, 2%. Shanghai down 5, call that flat. Hang Seng down 282 with 1.1%. Bonds, 75.75 is a 10-year rate, so that's up a little bit. 1 -0.30, that's up quite a bit from the -50 it was the other day. Japan positive 0.007, so they're right on the number. Oil up 85 cents, 24.48. So a little sigh of relief in the oil patch. 25 is a lot better than 20. Rent up 17 cents, 32.04. Natural gas, 187, which is actually up quite a bit from the 168 a few weeks ago. RBOB down to 64 cents again. And gold is 1682. It's down 79 cents. But silver, 1536. Copper, 225. Still way, way down. So anybody thinks that if you're a copper guy and look at copper regarding China health is not good. Anyway, we got for us traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a significant crash on Lakeshore Drive, northbound side just before Lawrence Avenue. A pin-in accident involving a vehicle possibly going over 100 miles per hour and going the wrong way on Lakeshore Drive. Two ambulances have been dispatched, and the victim has been extricated from the vehicle. Monroe to Hollywood is up to 17 minutes. Expect long delays heading northbound on Lakeshore Drive as traffic builds in that direction. Southbound side not affected at this time. No issues coming on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower, Stevenson, all quiet. Southside expressways are looking good as well. Only on the other crash in the area is in southwestern suburbs. Woodward Avenue at 87th Street, there is a crash. Weather today, after the best day of 2020 so far weather-wise yesterday, we'll return back into the 40s and 50s over the next week or so with lots of rain in the forecast. Today, rainy on and off throughout the day, a high of 57. Right now it's overcast and foggy and 50 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, overcast with a high of 81 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 59. On this day in sports history, a couple of things of note that happened in the 70s. On this date in 1974, Hank Aaron broke Babe Ruth's home run record, Chief, hitting number 715 in Atlanta. We've all seen the famous video of that with the fans running on the field to hug him and jump with him as he's rounding the bases. Those guys would have been tackled this day and age.
Oh, yeah.
On this date in 1975.
Arrested. It's a felony.
That's right. On this date in 1975, the following year, Frank Robinson became the first African-American manager in the major leagues. He managed Cleveland, who beat New York 5-3 that day. Chief.
Out of all my something I was lined up to say here, but in regards to Frank Robinson, as a Cub fan, I never really saw the Reds play. He's probably the best ball player, Kevin, that I never saw play.
Really? You never saw him play?
Well, I mean, either, I played on TV.
Between chances with the Cubs during his Reds days and with the White Sox during his Baltimore days, he never had a chance to see him play.
I was on the Pittsburgh schedule. Whenever I went to see him, I saw
whenever the Pirates came through. So you saw Clemente.
I saw Clemente probably 7-8 times, and you know what? I never got tired of watching him.
You wouldn't.
No.
You wouldn't.
Every time I went, he did something that nobody else could do. I knew that at age 12, for God's sake. I mean, it's like, you know, somehow you get a feeling, Kevin. When I was a freshman, No, I had the car, so I must have been a sophomore at Notre Dame. Secretariat ran in the that match race at Arlington Park.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I remember that.
Billy Hake and a bunch of us, we piled in the car. We had, you know, we were loaded. We had a big Dynamic 88, so we had six of us haul our behinds up to Arlington Park, and I watched him walk out. You know, he was only a 3-year-old. It was late. They usually saddle him, and they got the horse and everything. You know, whatever they call it, the lead horse, the whole bit for those guys because they're so skittish. He walks out, no saddle on, looks up at the crowd, kind of shakes his head like they're all here to see me. And they saddle him in front of the grandstand, which I've never seen that before in a thoroughbred. They pop. Jackie hops on. They go up and down a few times to warm up. They go in the back. He's with these seven other stiffs, and you either bet him or the seven stiffs, who probably weren't stiffs, but compared to him, all of a sudden he runs, and he's, you know, marginally ahead of everybody at the turn of the stretch. Jackie basically says, okay, no whip, no nothing. He kind of bends down, and all of a sudden you're like, the stretch run was something like I've never seen. I mean, to this day, he had the longest stride between, you know, front legs leaving and last legs coming down of any horse ever. Ruffian was pretty close. Ruffian, who died at Belmont Park. And I just got this, you know, hair stand up in the back of my neck going, I could live to be 200. I'm never going to see anything like that again. And I haven't. You could just sort of tell, right, Kevin? Clemente was the same kind of person. Well, he was a person, not a horse, but still. You could just sort of tell. And, you know, I was watching one of the old Hawk games last night. Of course, I dozed before I realized it was the fourth game of the they're playing San Jose in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who was there and looked spectacular, considering how bad he was and died 7 years later, was Stan Mikita. He looked like he was 40. And then what? It couldn't have been. When did he die? 16? And they said his brain was like
that sounds about right. Yeah. Did you ever meet the guy post hockey career?
I just briefly. It was at a golf thing that I went to, and he was the pro, and he just was a quick hello. I mean, I just walked.
He
by
died August 7th, 2018.
Okay,
2018. Okay.
So not quite 2 years ago.
But the point being that he always looked great. He always looked great. And you know, when I'm the same kind of thing. I've several occasions where he was either the speaker at some kind of event, or you just catch him at the old Chicago Stadium, you know, and later at the United Center, where, you know, he'd just be there, and he was always willing to shake hands and share a few words. But yeah, he looked great up until he didn't, you know, and then it happened quickly.
It happened real quickly for Doug Buffon too. I'm surprised. I mean, you hang in there, and all of a sudden you get downhill because he. The last, what, 5 or 6 years, man, he couldn't go anywhere, right? And he was, you know, he didn't recognize anybody. All people did was say, you know, they were praying for him in, like, 2014. They'd say, where's Stan? Oh, he can't come. He's in bad shape. I mean, he went from looking pretty good in 2010 to being, you know, having 5 years of misery, pretty much. And it's, you know, it's pretty awful. But no, Frank Robinson, I think he has to be one of the top 10 ball players. And like I said, a lot of people, he played Cincinnati and Baltimore, right? So I'm going to talk about
it. Yeah. Well, and yeah, wasn't he MVP in each league?
Yeah. He won a triple crown in the American League, I believe.
Yeah, and you know, Frank Robinson was not one of those guys who was going to blow you away with anything. He was just really, really good at everything, and as a power hitter, you know, that was the one thing you'd always notice about him is the ball just jumped off his bat.
He was a huge man. He was a big guy.
Yeah, he really was a big guy.
I mean, he was
probably today we'd call him small, but you know, he was just naturally built like a strong man.
Well, but yeah, and I mean, but the people weren't as heavy now. I mean, as they are now. I mean,
and baseball players. You know, there was a conventional wisdom among baseball players that you didn't want to lift weights too much because it would screw up the how fluid you were, how fluid your swing was.
Right, and I mean, even Andre Dawson was a real strong man, but what was he, 185 pounds? But I mean,
yeah,
he was
like
ripped.
That. You know, Willie Mays. What was Willie Mays? 185 pounds.
Well,
600 and some odd home runs.
Well, even Stretch, Willie McCovey, he was a monster. Probably was 230. It wasn't like he was 260 or anything.
Yeah.
But man, he was, boy, talk about a big guy. There was remember Lou Brock saying, they were interviewing him about stealing bases, and he goes, "Well, you don't want to get too big of a leadoff because if you go back, if you have to dive back in," he goes, "Let me put it this way: when Willie McCovey's playing first base." And he catches the ball and he tags you. It's like he got hit by a bull. And he's not even doing it on purpose. It's just how big he is, how big the ball is, and he comes down and tags you, and it feels like whap. He goes, "You don't want to do that two or three times. It's a bad day." He goes, "He just was such a huge man. He didn't know how strong he was." He goes, "You never wanted to lead off so Willie had to tag you." I would never even thought of that, Kevin.
We also had Frank Howard. I think it was.
Well, he was huge.
It was Brooks Robinson who said that, you know, the hardest ball he ever saw hit was Frank Howard, who was a really big man. And he said, "Yeah, he hit a line drive over third base. I jumped, but it was several feet over my glove. I landed. I turned around, and it was hitting the wall."
Who was it that they played him to bunt? And the guy moved in the third base. Was it Pete Rose? And said, "What did we do that for? What if he just swung away?" There's no way I could have reacted.
You would die.
Yeah. He was what, 6'7", 6'8"? It was before Royce. Big, huge guy. I mean, anyway, they're always big. I was impressed when I did the shtick for the SIBO. Went out and went to see a World Series game, and we trotted out, the CBOE, trotted out Moose Skowron. And Moose wasn't as tall as me. I was 6'4 at the time, and I'm going to say Moose was, he was 70 something, and he was still 6'1.5", 6'2". God, the guy had legs like a fullback and big, huge shoulders. I'm like, man, this guy at age 25, you didn't mess with. Matter of fact, you might not want to mess with him now. He's a big dude. I mean, there's reasons why he was a, you know, a serious softball player before and after he was a Yankee, right? Anywho. So Kevin, industries, you know, coming back from this, I mean, of course, everybody in the talking heads are all, is the bottom in, is the bottom not in. I normally, Kevin, when you're in the business, you see the S&P's up and down, S&P's up and down, and you see, you know, realize how the ARB works, and the S&P's are down, people will buy the S&P and sell stocks, and they don't care what the stocks are, and they drive them all down. You know, that's the routine when you see things like that, certainly yesterday or the day before. But sometimes, I mean, it's maybe sort of rare, you get the feeling that what's happening to all these companies, maybe not the top 50, 60 that are in most people's baskets. I don't think nobody has a basket. I will go on a limb on this one. Nobody has a basket where all 500 stocks are in it. I'm going to say most places, the amount of stocks that are in it are probably 40, 50, 60, which probably picks you up 85% of the, maybe even a little more of the S&P. So you're not going to be screwing around with, you know, if PTI was the 500 stock, you really don't care if you get 300 shares of PTI off, if we had shares. So everybody's got their basket. So you can't, that's when the opportunity there is, if the spoos are way down, and basically everybody pukes all these stocks, if you think one of the 50 doesn't belong there, may say it's a, say it's a company that's making test kits or something, you can, that's your chance to buy that company. Okay, so every time something happens, there's an opportunity. So your opportunity when the spoos are way down and the market gets puked on is for you to pick one or two stocks, because I don't care if I'm doing the ARB, if the company you have has got, you know, gold bars, they're going down. Now, as the day wears on, you'll see some are down 5%, some are down 3%, some are down 4%, some might be up as people start to do that. So that's the opportunity. But right now, Kevin, I'm looking at this and I don't know how much money, and we'll get into this in a second, the Fed can essentially print and keep the world afloat before we turn into Weimar. I mean, we're not Weimar yet, but we're way closer than we were 2 months ago. So right now I'm sitting there going, we can do all we want. The bottom could be in. Yet if there's 100,000 people flying every day and it's Labor Day, I don't see any airline afloat. They might get nothing but loans, and they might get bought out, but your common stock, I think, is in serious jeopardy. And it's not like I have a short position in UAL and I'm talking it down. I'm not like some people on TV who should go nameless. Maybe Ackman, one of them. I would never do that. Everybody knows that. But I have to wonder, because it's not like it hasn't happened before, right, Kevin? I mean, 20 years ago, everybody looks at United Airlines. How many people realize that stock was worthless 20 years ago, and this is a new stock? What percentage of the investing public do you think understands that under the age of 35? I'm going to say 5%.
Now, even over the age of 35.
Yeah, well, yeah, but so, I mean, how many people realize that Citigroup had, what, a 10-for-1 reverse split? I mean, these are things. I mean, the last night I was in the Tripoli Tap, and Scott says, "Well, hope things are good. You'll be safe." He goes, "What's your worry?" I said, "Scott, I'm not worried about there being a Tripoli Tap. There'll be a saloon right here whenever this is over. I just want Nick and Vito to be the guys that own it, not somebody else." But my concern is the same for United Airlines. It's the same for Cleveland Cliffs. It's the same for Ford. It's the same for all these places. I mean, will there be an automobile industry? Yeah. Does General Motors stock have to go worthless again, which it did in 2008? I hope not. I mean, these are, and whatever the government's doing is uneven. I mean, we know that. It's uneven. Some people, I'll tell you how uneven things are, Kevin, in this. I have no idea why. In the last tax act, if you, which I'm going to say, if you talk to Bob enough, which you did, you might be smart enough to have, and I'm not getting into your personal drawers here, but you might be smart enough to be
smart
doing.
Right or not.
Yeah.
Well, you have to buy me dinner a few times first.
Yeah, yeah. If you were smart enough to have, Kevin O'Neill Corp or Kevin O'Neill LLC or something, according to the last tax act, for no reason whatsoever that I could see, your first, I think it's 300,000, Kevin, but I'm not sure, it could be 200. Your first flow through from the LLC or the subchapter S is taxed at 21% and not, it's taxed like a corporation and not as an individual, which to me is absolute BS. Why that is, I have no idea. But now this thing comes across, and if you are Kevin O'Neill Inc. or whatever, you cannot take advantage of this loan to small business. However, if you're a sole prop, that's considered like a paycheck. So you can go out and get this loan as a sole prop, essentially pay yourself for the next 2.5 months and then get the loan forgiven. But if you have a LLC or a subchapter S and flow through the money to you, you can't. Now, I have three questions. Why is the first one set up the way it did? It made no sense. Why is this one set up the way it does? It made no sense. And why are they diametrically opposite?
I don't know. I actually heard someone talking about that on TV. I don't remember who. It was late last night, or maybe when I woke up this morning, I'm not sure. But it, you know, they said, yeah, they kind of understand that they screwed that one up and they've got to fix it.
Who's again, they? Who's
hurry, but don't rush.
Yeah, but who's his voice to who? Mnuchin? Trump? Who's he talking
about? I don't know. I don't know what to tell you about that, Tom.
Because, I mean, you know, statements like that are like a fart in the wind.
But it is, it does indicate that there's an understanding, at least, that that there's flaws here like that that make no sense.
All right, but the fact that...
You know, where that's going to go, I don't know. I can't pretend to tell you.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've been touting the fact for as long as I've been around. And, you know, between John and I and the score and everything, it's been pushing almost 20 years I've been on radio or podcast. There isn't a week doesn't go by that I don't say this $3,000 capital gains thing for stocks is ridiculous, since the stocks are 20 times higher than they were when I got in the business. That's the same number. Now, am I going to say, gee, I got a phone call into Mnuchin and other people recognize it and don't worry, it'll change? No, it hasn't changed. And I don't have a Mnuchin's phone number and it probably won't change. You think these guys, I mean, it's whatever. I
don't know. They're going to do round four. They're going to fix it. They're going to ruin other stuff. They're, you know, I would say I watch all this unfold in horror, but I don't. It's kind of bemusement. It should be horror, but it's more bemusement.
Yeah, it's a. I don't know how in God's name, with 100 people in one place and 435 in the other, do you somehow put together a 1,400 page document in 4 days? How much of that stuff was waiting already, and they're just basically other bills looking for a bill to stick it on?
Probably half or better. I don't know.
That to me is just a, I don't know. We've talked about this before, but that's a horse bleep way to do government. For God's sake, why can't you just pass a bill to pass a bill? I don't know. It's just somehow there must be a reason for it.
It's a really expensive way to run government, and we can't afford it.
That's the nice way of saying it.
Yeah, but it is the nice way of saying it, but it is so true. We just cannot afford to do this, and yet we do, and yet we continue it, and no sane person would see it any other way. Yet they do.
Yep. Well, what switching to sports, and Maddie, I certainly would love your input on this. My opinion that I voiced 2 days in a row now is that we're going to have people go back to work while there's still a chance that you can catch the disease. And it's going to be on you to basically say, I'm not going to take that chance. That's just my prediction. Now, where does that apply to sports? Are we going to open up the stadium?
I saw a report that they're talking about going empty stands set up in Arizona and playing seven-inning games and a lot of doubleheaders for baseball.
And I think that's gaining some traction. Like, that could happen as soon as May.
Yeah. In the meantime, though, I mentioned this yesterday, Korean Baseball Organization set to start up on the 20th of April. So, pick your team. Matt, see if you can find a line on it.
I'm sure you can.
Well, I mean,
I'm sure you can. I'm going Kwangju Heroes just because I like heroes.
I need to see the league here and learn the teams.
My question, which you guys both dodged, by the way, is at some point, are we going to say we're opening up the place, the chances of you getting infected are not zero, and by the way, we're not telling the people on six feet all sides of you to stay away. It's your decision, show up or don't. I mean, we're going to have to do that at some point, whether it's September.
We're going to have to do that, and nobody wants to. The inclination always is, we have to make sure this never happens again. One life is too many. One life lost is too many. You know, all of that kind of sloganeering, and it's folly to try and achieve that. But that's what's keeping us from going back even now. Now, I think there's still some areas that are going to get hit with their wave. I think Chicago's due for the wave to wash over the city.
Whenever I think of the wave, I think of the other wave, so don't use that term.
Okay. I think that's going to happen. We may see it in Indiana and Indianapolis. I don't know. But with this, there's so many rural manufacturing areas, and I have students, because I talk to my students all the time. Many of them work in manufacturing, and they're at work. You know, they have products that they have to build, and they're in working the production line now, and they don't have mass cases. It's not like running through the factory like crap through a goose or anything like that.
My nephew used to work in a place where they've taken all the rest of their product lines and put them basically on the back burner, and they've moved all the stuff for ventilators and anything in the healthcare industry to the front. They're working every day, and nobody's got it.
Yeah, so it's I
or they're young people; they don't know they got it.
More of that, but I think everybody's just scared to be the first, just like they were scared to be the ones who didn't shut down.
Well, Kevin, we've got
we had yeah. Everything shut down, almost like the dominoes falling. Everybody was afraid, afraid. Well, if I don't shut down and something happens, I'm gonna be blamed. I think nobody wants to be the first one, because if something happens, then the heat's gonna be too much.
Well, Kevin,
there's not a lot of courage in the world.
How much? I don't know. I it's always there. It's Lori Lightfoot getting a haircut when nobody else is supposed to. There's this class thing going. Everybody wants to be able to get takeout. Anybody, Lori, Jay, Donald, does anybody not think that the people in that kitchen are closer to 6 feet? Everybody wants to be able to go to the store and get your booze. Does anybody not think that the people stacking the booze on the shelf come within 6 feet of people? They don't care if those people get it, the people who work, those kinds of people, just not me? I mean, I know that's harsh, but it's right there. It's right in front of my face, Kevin.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I picked up a meal a couple days ago at one of my favorite local microbrews the other day. There were people working in there who were closer than 6 feet and handed things off for each
Kevin,
other.
We're off on Friday, so we'll see you next week. So have a nice weekend, buddy. You coming this way?
No.
You're hanging.
No, I'm not allowed.
Oh, God.
I'm not planning to. I'm going to go back to the same place, and I'm going to order their Easter meal.
Oh, God. All right,
which,
bud.
Which looks really good, actually.
Well, you could always grab the chicken at Sam's and say it's a turkey.
I could do that. Who has turkey for Easter? You got to go lamb.
Lamb or ham?
One of the places in their family is the Jesus Latin Grill, and they have on the menu of one of their Easter meal choices is their lamb, their marinated lamb, that I think is going to be really good.
Well, if you happen to drive this way, I could take you to the Restaurant Depot and drop a whole lamb on your cart.
Hey, if I drive that way, if I'm able to sneak into town and avoid the quarantine cops, I'd much rather go to Tripoli with you.
They're closed.
Well, it's okay. We can sneak in the back door.
You know what? The thought has crossed my mind. Take care, buddy. SP Futures up 22. Right. NASDAQ Futures up 78. Come back. We should have Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
While digesting Reader's Digest in the back of the dirty bookstore, a plastic flag with gum on the back fell out on the floor. Well, I picked it up and I ran outside, slapped it on my window shield. And if I could see old Betsy Ross, I'd tell her how good I feel. But your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore.
Well, everyone, thanks, Stacks and Jacks. I'm telling you, I just met Webber on a board. We have Sir Russell Rhodes with SP Futures now up 28. NASDAQ Futures up 95. We're starting to rise up after that huge sell-off from the highs yesterday morning. So, Matty, you think the Vietnam War thing is still, I recognize that right away, bud?
Oh, yeah. That was, of course, John Prine, yeah. Chicago legend who passed away last night from COVID-19 complications at age 73. But that was one of his first big ones back in 1970. Roger Ebert famously discovered him at the Fifth Peg. I don't know if you remember that bar.
I know.
On Armitage Avenue, about a block away from our house, 858 West Armitage. And John Prine was...
58.
Yeah, it's now a coffee shop slash apartment building.
Okay.
But
isn't everything?
Yeah, yeah, of course. And Roger Ebert went and saw him play and wrote a review in 1970 that basically made his career. He was a mailman.
I'll bet he, I wonder if he ever played at the Quiet Night. That's where I used to see the guys. That
well,
were
him and Steve Goodman all came up together and were best friends. And sort of that folk revival of the early 70s
Chicago. Steve Goodman was a regular at the Quiet Night.
Yeah, and I think Prine was too. And both of those guys would have like lines around the block. For like these sort of open mic slash, you know, every Friday, every Saturday night shows at these random bars. And then literally like a year later, he was signed to Atlantic Records and playing with like Bob Dylan and Johnny Cash and all these
well,
other
Monday
guys.
Monday night, I think it was like no cover, believe it or not, no cover for Siegel Schwall.
Wow.
They were, well, it was a Monday night, but still. Lest we, anybody think, Russell, that when we start talking about these death numbers and things and we, mentioned sometimes that a lot of people were compromised, and there's a quote from Teddy Roosevelt here, which I think is spot on. It says, "Death is always and under all circumstances a tragedy. For if it is not, then it means that life itself has become one." I don't think it's more pointed than that. So if death is not a tragedy,
yeah,
it means somebody's life was one. And let's hope we don't have anybody whose life has been a tragedy. I mean, everybody's missed, I think.
You got me with the depth of that one early in the morning, and I have no, there's no way to refute what you just said other than just agree with it.
The
you know, you're absolutely correct. Regardless of, I've got a 101-year-old grandmother in the home down in North Florida, and she had a heart attack about 3 months ago, and she was a great old lady. She's still alive though. She kicked it, and she's back in the home. It's going to take a lot more than that. Even though she's 101 and the oldest living female Marine in America.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. She's a badass. Gam is a badass.
All right, so she was born in 1918.
Yep.
So she's 11 when the stock market crashes. So she spends her entire
She's been around for a lot. She joined up and was one of the first female Marine officers as well.
Wow.
And as she put it, I think she was born in 1919. She basically did what her parents said, we can't afford college, so she went into the military, and right after the military, World War II happened, and she's even a World War II vet. I hadn't even thought about that part as well.
All right, so, Russell.
Even though she's 101, living in the home, it will be a tragedy, partially because she won't be able to regale my children with tales from the past anymore.
Boy, Carl was all over that last Friday about the old people can't even see their families. How stupid is that?
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I was on the front porch, much more than 6 feet away from a bunch of people. And a car came by real slowly and then stopped, and there was a neighbor and her kid, and it was the kid's grandfather who was he was trying to catch them on their walk so he could say hi and give them a virtual hug, which I thought was really, really nice.
Wow. But I just quick question regarding your grandmother. I'm gonna say she in 19, whatever the hell that was, the Marines didn't officially take women. So what do they call them?
This was explained to me. First off, this is much longer story than we have time for, even in the full hour. I never met the woman until about 4 years ago. So
how was that?
I was put up for adoption, and I did not find real family or my other family until about 5 or 6 years ago, and so that's how. And needless to say, I rushed right down there because of her age, because I talked to her on the phone once, and she goes, "I've been spending my whole life trying to find out where you were."
Well, so she'd have brought you.
But there was something around. She was. It's like she served during World War II, and then she was the first class of women that were allowed into whatever officer school she went to.
Okay, because I'm going to say if she raised your ass, you'd be a lot more disciplined. No cardigan sweaters, you know, might be a lot.
Oh different. God, yeah, I would be. Actually, if her daughter, who was my mom, had raised me, I'd probably be in jail right now.
Oh, all right, so. Well, it's. That's not so good.
So we'll just leave it with that one. So
the reason why I dig into this is I'll keep this brief. Is my uncle used to always give my stepfather. He was a kidder anyway, big huge guy. So when he kidded you, really couldn't do much about it because he looked like Luca Brasi. But we would always be kidding him a little bit, you know, college boy, and I never really understood. There was always a little more biting than just humor. And my uncle was a tool and die maker, and became an installer of printing presses and a whole bit. But he was a real intelligent guy, but that was his shtick. He was a tool and die maker, which is a serious, shall we say, craft. So he was a 4F, something. So he, even though he wanted to enlist, he could not. Okay, so he was here during the war. And my other uncle, his older brother, he was like a CB, but he wasn't in the Army. He was in Pearl Harbor, or I think he was a welder in ship repair or something. So when they decided to do the GI Bill, just like the bills today that you see, like what does Kevin say, hurry but don't rush or something like that, or John Wooden, they put these bills together. They were pretty much half-assed. And I'm going to say that your grandmother, no female anywhere, even if you were a general in the wax or the waves or whatever, was eligible for the GI Bill. And none of the people here who said, no, you can't go in the Army. You got to be a tool and die maker because that's what you are. All of a sudden, it's 20 years later, and my uncle's still a tool and die maker. Another guy's like my stepfather enlisted. Well, he not only drafted or enlisted, but he was going to be a navigator. He was a smart guy, and he was supposed to muster out the day after the second A bomb hit, and it turns out he never had to go. So he didn't fight or anything. I mean, he was about ready to go. So he essentially got 4 years of DePaul paid for. And he became, you know, vice president and executive, and my uncle was still a tool and die maker. So there was a certain edge to it of all the benefits. Not that people in the Army don't deserve the benefits. I mean, they did. Right. But the point is, the cutoff is like, wait a minute, you made me be a tool and die maker 6 days a week, which I didn't mind doing, because that was my job for the, quote, effort. And by the way, you know, those places weren't all that great to work in at the time. I mean, can you imagine the pollution and the stuff in there?
Oh, gosh, I can only imagine.
And yet none of the women who were in the same place, that were nurses and so forth, they got to go either. So when you make these cutoffs, boy, you're on one side of the line or the other, it's not all that pleasant.
No, it's not. The haves and the have-nots can show up an awful lot in that.
Yeah.
But on the other side of it, you know, the folks that actually went over and fought, they deserve it. I feel like the GI Bill and some things like that were ways to give them two or four, however many years of their life back, and give them a chance to do a little catching up as well. Plus, you got to figure that the GI Bill probably was something that helped make us the leader of the world for the following, you know, couple of generations at least.
I'm going to say Russell is the single biggest public works project that involved people moving up in class than anything else we've ever done.
Well,
you took people from the hood in New York that went in the Army, and all of a sudden they're in college, and all of a sudden they're the president of a company. They would never have dreamed of that coming out of, you know, Mulberry Street in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely. And they still do similar things now, but there's so many. Everybody goes to college now.
Well, you get a couple years.
You know,
you get something.
I shouldn't say everybody, but you know, it's accessible even at a junior college level. That if you do very well, you can bump yourself up. But
yeah, but you're not. I don't think they're getting. You don't just sign up for 4 years in the military and get 4 years of Loyola on the government anymore. I don't.
No. But you do get there are programs that help military folks that want to further their education, and these terrible for-profit colleges actually prey on those guys, which drives me absolutely insane.
We could have a big debate on that one of these days.
Yeah. But the for-profit colleges?
Well, yeah, because everything's for-profit. It's a question of whether you have shareholders, whether you're paid all
the time. If you're a public company and you're steering people to come to, you know, your supposed university, which really has no accreditation, that you start to have a bigger conflict with respect to what you're doing for the students versus other schools.
Why are we so reluctant?
University of Illinois, or you know, and Loyola's kind of. I'm finding that Loyola's kind of funny because there really is a big Jesuit thing going on where there's an attempt to give back as much as you possibly can that we try to instill in the students. And I've started to buy into that a little bit as well myself.
Well, I don't disagree. I'm just saying that to think that just because Notre Dame at 70 grand a year doesn't have shareholders, that somehow or another people aren't doing very well with that is a fool's game.
Well, I think people are doing very well with it. I just feel like if you're running a for-profit university, you are going to sell. You're going to be very aggressive in recruitment and possibly pull people away from what would be best for them.
Why are we so reluctant to accredit those places? Because obviously, with the
price, they don't have people with the proper education teaching people.
See, you're walking right into.
They don't have people with PhDs teaching.
Well, it's a good thing that you are. You're older now than you were before. What's the song say? I'm older now than I used to be, or something like that.
I'm older right now than I was when I called in.
Yes, but you're one of your heroes. Milton Friedman had two things he ragged about totally. Whenever you put him on a subject, one was the cab drivers and why the city was able to felt that they should monitor the amount of cab drivers and not let supply and demand take it. The other was medical schools, and his biggest rant ever was allowing doctors to tell people how many medical schools you can have, because clearly it was in their best interest to have not enough, because they wanted to keep the price high. Now, it seems to me that right now, that one of the reasons, and I'm not disparaging your teaching, but by the way, I'd probably like your teaching, and in the back row, I'd bring the tomatoes, but I probably wouldn't throw them.
Thank you.
Just saying. Because my arm is bad these days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if I could hit you. I didn't want to. If I didn't hit you, then I'd really look like an idiot, right?
You know what? I'm not very mobile to dodge either. It would, you know, you throwing things at me, I probably wouldn't be able to get out of the way.
Let's just say that in the unbelievable event that I actually snag one on the mound, the throw to first base is just as much an adventure.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be quite that, you know. But what I'm saying is if you and Eric and Kevin, and we obviously have people on the show that are professors, Hal Snar, if we say, hey, screw this, we're all moving to Chicago, we're going to buy one of these old high schools that seem to be up for grabs, and we're going to put a small liberal arts school in here, and we're going to charge $20,000 a year, and we're going to have 10 real serious professors. No. The reason why we're not getting the credit is not because they don't like you or Kevin or Hal or Eric. It's because we don't want any competition, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not.
No, they don't. They don't.
So I'm not. But actually, I know you guys have probably. I don't know if you've talked about it in your classes that you're doing online, but how do our politicians that have basically, in my opinion, have not. Some of the guys are, you know, they're dealing with what they've been dealt. But this virus in day one, being that we'd heard about it late, blah, 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 and then basically I'm thinking several weeks, maybe a couple of months behind. How in God's name are these guys going to turn society back on? Do you think they've even thought about it? That there's some sort of agreement and all of a sudden some person's going to turn things back to normal halfway back in one state and four people are going to die. And if the Twitter things are going to be all over the guy and some other, they say, why aren't you like Governor Joe who still has people, armed guards on the beaches? And I don't see how this ever gets going in today's world, do you?
I think they've actually, you know, tried to start getting things going in the countries that were ahead of us on this. And then they would keep a close eye on the numbers and then maybe shut things down again. I think Singapore loosened things up a little bit, started to see a small rise in cases again, and then they told everybody to stay home. And I think Japan did the same thing. The big difference between those guys and us is they're like one state. So, you know, I do believe, you know, everybody keeps talking about the uniform response to this. I do think it should be more of a state by state thing because our states vary so much. I think it's really just going to be relying on the numbers. I assume that they're going to be overly cautious on the starting things back up phase. But, you know, with the understanding that they may have to backtrack if we get a week into this and some people start to get it. And then also, you know, there is this aspect of personal responsibility with respect to how you behave when we come out of this. Just like there should be personal responsibility when you go to the grocery store. My wife is the one that goes to the grocery store, and you know, she wears the mask. She was actually wearing giant gloves without fingers on them yesterday when she got home from the grocery store. But, you know, behaving in a way that lowers the chance that you're going to pick it up. There's going to be a personal behavior aspect to this. And I know the first thing that I'm going to do when I'm allowed to get back out of the house, is I got to get back down to Loyola because there's some things I got to get out of my office. And when I do that, I'm not going to go wandering into anybody else's office and say, so what did you do during all of this? And I'm going to keep my distance. I'm probably going to wear a mask and a few of the other things.
Why?
So, yeah, I think part of the problem with all of this is there have been, and we've seen, you know, like people going to spring break. There have been a lot of people that have not behaved properly through all of this. I have a funny feeling that people's, after seeing how serious it was, I'm hoping that people use their noggins a little bit more and do things that will avoid, you know, passing it around. So I think you'll ease up, but you'll ease up and you will encourage people to get a little bit started on your life once again, but, you know, wash your hands all the time, wear a mask for a while.
Why since it took, since the beginning of October till 4 days ago, for these idiots to decide that wearing a mask is slightly better than not wearing one, why would I ever believe them, Russell?
It doesn't matter if you believe them or not. It's up to you to do what you think is going to be best through all of this.
But I mean, it's not like they gave me a list of if you wear this mask, change it every 4 hours, change it every 5 hours. If you think you walk by with somebody who was diseased, how would you ever know? You probably need to change it right away. I mean, the entire care and feeding of the quote mask, putting one on for 3 weeks, is that helping? I've read stuff.
Gosh,
that's the dumbest thing you could do. I've also read it from people saying that you're way better off not wearing gloves and just wiping your hands down when you get in the car and when you walk in the house than you are wearing gloves. So I'm hearing stuff all over the place that everybody's got an opinion, uh-huh. And like Aaron Burnett says, you know, opinions are like bottoms. Everybody's got one and they all stink.
Well, I mean, all I can say is that, you know, if you're around a bunch of, you do know the things that you do that can make this more of a problem. You know what I'm saying? You don't
right.
have a big house party. You know what? The last thing in the world that you should do is, let's say that they lift this thing next Thursday. You don't need to have a house party and invite 300 of, I started to say your closest friends, but nobody has 300 close friends. 300 people that want to mooch off of you and drink all your alcohol. You don't invite a shitload of, a bunch of people over
what,
to your house.
Sorry
about that.
If Manny Weber tweeted out that he had 10 cases of beer, he'd have 50 close friends.
I know he would. Don't do that.
If he said, bring your own, he's got 3 people there.
Don't do that. You know, don't go hang out in big groups. Don't go to Wrigley Field. Or, you know, we don't really have the
problem. But
don't go to Wrigley Field.
At some point we're going to, you know. I mean, I was talking earlier, and this is just me putting it together. If I was going to do this, I would want, by the way, tests in my back pocket. And I'm going to say every building downtown or every school at Loyola, then on Sunday, the professors are going to show up, and they're all going to take a test. And if you already had it,
I would be totally cool with that.
And if you already had it, you're in. Mm-hmm. If you don't have it, you're in, but we're going to test you 2 days from now just to make sure. And if you got it, get home, be by yourself for 14 days. Until we can do that, Russell, we're peeing in the wind. We have no idea what we're talking about yet. We got everybody talking about it.
Well, the one thing you know to do is if you stay away from other people, you're not going to pick it up.
Well,
No, really, if you stay away from other people, you're not going to pay. That's one that I can guarantee you. If I don't leave this house, in which I haven't, today is 4 weeks for me.
Why are you doing this for 4 weeks?
Why am I doing this for 4 weeks?
Yeah.
Because I believe it's the right thing for me to be doing, because I got to be around for a 13 and a 15-year-old girl. As they continue to grow up and they need their father around. That's why I'm doing it.
Okay.
I'm doing it because I believe that they are not lying to us about what the situation is out there. So that's why I'm doing it. And I did it before they told me I had to. You know, I was here, and my a friend of mine in Memphis, they have a river, they have a path on the river, like we have the lakefront path.
Yep.
I had a friend in Memphis that sent me a picture, and there were like 500 people all on top of each other on the first nice day in Memphis by the river.
Well, I'll tell you what, Russell, we are social animals. If the weather gets better, if these guys keep saying everybody's got to be at home, we're going to have to go to martial law because people are not going to stay in. They're just not.
Well, maybe, you know what? A small part of me is starting to think maybe we need an authoritarian government like they have in Singapore. With the guy that's in charge right now.
Don't ever.
But maybe we just have lifelong bureaucrats to tell us how to live our lives.
I'm not going with that. I refuse to.
Well, part of me is starting to think if people are not capable of doing the right thing, you know, not going to spring break and then going home to your parents, and you know, when you're being told that this thing is floating around, if people can't do that, then maybe we do need a government that tells us how to live our lives
I'm stunned you're saying this because
and I am too, but I'm actually, and no, maybe it's
look at the government
in,
look at
the
people
in the hall. I'm losing my mind.
Who are you gonna put in, who's gonna be in charge of this government?
When I see bunches of people, you know, groups of people hanging out in the park when there's a brewing pandemic, and some states have already said, don't leave the house. You know, a part of me thinks maybe we do need, a government that tells us what to do more if, as a group, we're not capable of doing
okay,
the right
so
thing.
Who's going to be in charge of this government? Trump, Lightfoot, Jay?
None of those folks. We would have lifelong government officials like they have in China or like they have in the Soviet Union that worked their way up. You know?
Oh, God.
And that's one of the big arguments against Trump, is he doesn't know how to government because he was never elected to office.
I think we better go to break. Let's see. We're going to have bureaucrats become dictators.
I think you're discounting the percentage of facetiousness in Russell's comments.
The funny thing. I'm not being facetious.
That's what I'm saying,
somewhere.
Manny. I think you're wrong on that one. SP Futures up 31. NASDAQ Futures up 104. Those who would want safety instead of liberty deserve neither safety nor liberty. Whatever. We'll be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 29 now. NASDAQ futures up 98. Dow futures up over 200. So we're trying to make a move up. Yesterday we were really up at this hour. Up like 95 spook points. And finished down on the day, which is kind of strange. But we did. I didn't think that was going to happen. But then again, about 10 o'clock in the morning, I said, you know, I wonder if I should get short here. And I didn't. So I guess that's not good. I should have. DAX down 44.4%, FTSE down 42.7%, CAC around down 43%, that's a full 1%. Over in Asia, in a mixed bag, Nikkei up 403, 2%, Shanghai down 5%, call that flat, Hang Seng down 282, 1.1%. Bonds, almost 0.76 now on a 10-year rate, Bund minus 0.29, Japan positive 0.007, so not a lot positive, but positive nonetheless. Oil up 35 cents, 23.98. It was over 24 the last time we went through this. Brent up 18, 32.05. Natural gas 185. RBOB 64 cents. Gold, we've got gold down $4. We're still 16.79. Silver 15.31. Copper 2.26. So copper, that's about as low as I've seen it. Individual stocks in the Dow. We got Boeing up 4.97. We've got Apple up 337. So Apple is $100 higher now than it was last year at this time. Can't imagine how the world could look better for Apple now than it did back then, but it's up. American Express up $1.92. The Home Depot up $2.91. So virtually everything in the Dow is up, except for Disney down 9 cents. Manny, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports.
Coming up on 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a significant crash on the Dan Ryan. On the outbound side between Roosevelt Road and 18th Street, the Ryan is closed due to a crash with crews on the scene. So expect some delays if you're heading through downtown toward the outbound Ryan, as that is closed right now between Roosevelt and 18th Street due to a crash. We'll keep you posted on that as it develops further. Lakeshore Drive on the northbound side at Lawrence is reopened after a significant crash that happened earlier this morning. News coming from that. We'll keep you posted that whether that was a fatality or not. It sounded like it was a pretty bad crash on Lakeshore Drive, but that's all clear. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy right now. Eisenhower and Stevenson looking good. The outbound Ryan, as we mentioned, is delayed, but the inbound side still looking okay. No issues on the Bishop Ford or I-57 as well. Off the expressways, nothing major of note, so we're off to a decent start, but we do have a dense fog advisory in effect until after 9 a.m. this morning, so that's going to affect your morning commute if you're coming into downtown. Give yourself some time to get through the low visibility there. As far as weather is concerned, rain coming into the forecast on and off today, high of 57. Right now it's cloudy and foggy and 50 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, overcast with a high of 81 today. Right now it's clear and 60. Chief.
Just saying, not that we always complain and stuff on the show, but anybody who's listening every morning has to have picked up on the fact that we're having less accidents, and the accidents we have are pretty damn severe. And anybody who has not been locked in the basement like Mr. Russell has and actually been out and around so much like I have, I'm going to say that yesterday morning, the last 2 days, I drove in AV, and we take the outer drive in, and I'm going to say that I've never seen people drive as fast on the outer drive as they have the last 2 days. I went out to Orland last weekend, and I'm alone in my car with the alcohol, wiping the steering wheel down. I'm going to say I got passed up by at least four people going well over 100 miles an hour. And there isn't a policeman anywhere, and I know they're all getting paid someplace. And you can't tell me that while you're drawing the paycheck, I can't pull anybody over. What if they got this disease? Well, what if one of these idiots slams into me at 100 miles an hour? I'm paying you to do something. Do it. You know, the people that you're getting your carry out Chinese from, they're working in the kitchen. We don't care if they die, I guess. But somewhere along the line here, we got to get this back together, Russell. And or otherwise, we're not going to recognize this place. And I'm very serious about that. I mean, and somewhere along.
Oh no, I totally agree. I've been out in the car. My kid and I'll just get in the car and kind of drive around for the heck of it, just to get out. We won't even. The only thing that we did do once was my wife said, "You can take them, but don't let them out of the car and don't do anything." And we took a selfie in front of a Baskin Robbins and said, "We're here getting ice cream. You want anything?" Just to mess with her.
Yep.
Otherwise, I haven't even gotten out of the car. But also, yeah, I've seen people driving like bats out of hell.
There's no policeman anymore.
I saw on Twitter, because that's how I'm living my life now, where somebody in the in that S curve on Lakeshore Drive basically rolled themselves by themselves and hit the wall recently, going too fast, like you just talked about. But I have seen people drive like that. I used to live in I had an apartment that you could see look down on Lakeshore Drive, and yeah, I'd see people driving like that at 3 o'clock in the morning when there was no traffic.
Well, for what you're doing, I'm being careful as well. I mean, we're coming to work at PTI, but there's only a few people aren't. But we've got three people.
We'll put cameras on Lakeshore Drive that catch you speeding. They've got them in China. And it makes all the people drive the speed limit.
They've got them in a lot of places in the U.S.
They do have them in a lot of places in the U.S. That Lakeshore Drive should be the number one place in the world that you put that. Or at least in Chicago.
It absolutely will keep you driving, 55 or 45 or whatever you want.
And there's nowhere on Lake, unless you're way up by like Bryn Mawr or something like that, there's really nowhere for the police to sit there and try to get you.
What do you mean? What you got to do is get in my truck, drive.
No, I mean like park by the side of the road and try to catch somebody.
No, but what we have, this is the 20, even I know this is the 20, mm-hmm. Where are we, 21st century?
We're in the 21st century now.
All you got to do is put the machine in the front of my Suburban. I'm going 65. Somebody blows by me. If they're going 35 over me, the machine adds 65 to 35. They're going 100. I flip on the lights. I pull them over. I call ahead. I mean, all you have to do is drive around. And it's not just speeding. It's crazy stuff. People hitting the shoulder past people. I mean, this is... We've totally lost our way, But I want to ask you a serious question, Russell. Then I want to start asking you about the Fed, since you are a professor. After all this hype and after all this fear we've put in people, and I'm not saying it, a lot of it wasn't justified. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to open the place up where you and I are going to have to go back in society full bore, knowing we could still catch it after all this time.
Yeah.
I mean, we're eventually going to have to take the chance anyway.
Right.
Because this is not going to be gone forever.
We're basically going to have to weigh things out, the risk versus the reward.
The thing, and when I bitch about this, I am not trying to get anybody sick. I'm not trying to. Mm-hmm. I think people should take care. But what I'm always looking for when people make decisions, especially decisions without any sort of data, really, which they don't have in this thing. And we'll start to get it in a couple of weeks. So I'm going to hope that the decisions get a lot better when all these tests for whether you had it or have it are 5 minutes and everybody can start taking them. I think the decisions, even by our politicians, will start getting a lot better. So, I mean, having said all that, but what I'm saying is I'm still curious as to what the line is, Russell, because Kenny was saying his grandmother, by the way, was 100 years old, was, because she's no longer with us. And last year she caught this, she said she was absolutely in perfect health, caught this nasty flu bug that came through, and she was dead in 2 days. Couldn't fight it off. And we all know, if you read this stuff, that the cold and flu season decimates older people or compromised people every year. We pay no attention. We try and tell people to get a flu shot. Half the time the shot's not the right shot, whatever. We make no, any sort of movement towards trying to stop it at the border, trying to tell people from Australia they can't fly up here. We don't have anything like that. Okay. We've decided it's over our head. We just got to take this on. All right. Maybe someday we'll be able to do something better. Now, I also know if smallpox showed up again, hey, it's Katie barred the door. We don't want anybody to get smallpox except, actually, theoretically, smallpox would be somewhat easier because once somebody gets the disease, if you take the vaccination, it actually helps in the disease and knocks it way down. So forget I said that part. But let's just say smallpox shows up or polio. I don't care. I'll go live in a fallout shelter if polio shows up, believe it or not. I mean, but now we've got this thing that, but it's sort of in the middle. It's more towards A than it was B. It's worse than a regular flu. But now all of a sudden one person has to call it a pandemic. And you have somebody from public health, all this histrionic stuff, and they got pictures of people in China sending people home to the old people. The old people all die, and they're burning them all in the crematorium. Not good pictures. But I'm trying to find out where the line is. And I don't want the line to be somebody came out and said how horrible it's going to be, and it's a pandemic, and three governors did something, and they all 47 feel they got to do the same thing. I'm not saying that happened in this point. I just want to have some spot here, you know, where we say, okay, if this happens, we batten down the hatches. If this happens, we go, we're just going to have to take it. I mean, and I don't know that in the current world of tweets and instant hysteria with a tweet that goes viral in 30 minutes, I don't know that we're getting more or less capable of making these decisions rationally.
That's a loaded one. I don't think that there's been any irrationality to the decision making that we've had so far, and in fact, I think it's probably been a little bit more cautious than it should have been. You know, each country, it's going to be. We're going to learn from this. Hopefully, we're going to learn from this. Because, you know, the UK reacted differently than US did. They kind of wanted to see if things could just run its course like a normal flu. And then they figured out that wasn't the way to go. You know, the countries that we can believe their data, looking, especially again, the ones that had outbreaks before we did, you know, how did they handle it? Which ones were successful in keeping it under control?
None of them were.
You know, I think places like Singapore and Taiwan actually did a better job than most
places. They had tests. We didn't.
Yeah. Singapore is very much of a nanny state. They really are told how to live their lives from day to day. It's also only 5 million people there. It's a lot easier, and it's very homogeneous. They all live in a city. You know, it's not like the United States where you got people in the same country that live in a place like New York City and, you know, or live in the middle of Oklahoma. There's different ways to approach it in those two different places. But I think at some point you've got to open society back up. And the first thing that you can do is you can make it an individual choice as to whether you're going to venture back out or not. I know you haven't been going to series. Because I assume they closed.
Oh, yeah, they're all closed. There's no downtown. You got to come downtown just to see it. There's nobody here.
Is it just, Yeah, but you know what? I actually, you know, I mentioned that my kid and I get in the car and go driving around. I've been thinking about coming downtown, you know, getting her in the car and heading downtown, you know, early one evening just to see if looks. I assume that downtown looks like it did when I first moved to Chicago and nobody lived
no,
down
I'm
there.
No, I'm talking about Russell.
You know, you'd go downtown, it would just be, there'd be two or three people around.
175 West Jackson is a full square block. There's like five people in there. Our building, there's three of us 20 feet apart, still doing stuff for our clients, and there's one other person in the building. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I have had kind of an assumption that it was just a complete ghost town. Back before we had 24-hour trading, that's really what it was down there. And there was only one person that lived in the loop. It was the minister at the Methodist church.
Yeah.
He lived up in the top of the building. Now it's a little bit different than it was back then. But that's the vision that I've had.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Boarded up.
To start downtown on a building-by-building basis might not be a bad idea.
Yeah.
Anyway,
well, I can tell you that you know when they open this thing back up, that you know I'll try. There's some reasons I got to go to Loyola, and I'll go to Loyola cautiously and avoid everybody, and you know wash my hands after I do anything after I touch a doorknob and everything else, just to hope that I don't pick anything up. And I don't think I will pick anything up because nobody's been in that building for 3 or 4 weeks now, or 2 weeks now. But, you know, back to the what I was talking about before, you know, people were behaving very irresponsibly. And I don't know if it's because they don't believe that there was a problem. They didn't care that there was a problem. You know, all the college students were being told that this was really only killing old people, so why should they care about it?
It's a disease like we've never seen. 50% of the people have very mild symptoms are totally asymptomatic. Out of the remaining, mm-hmm. 30 of them get like almost the regular flu, maybe a little tougher for 10 days, and the other 20% got problems. I don't think there's ever been a disease like that.
No, and there's not been a disease that you carry around for 2 weeks. And can give it to other people, and you don't really know that you got it.
That's marginal. That's most of the stuff I've read is.
Or let's say 5 days.
That's another problem. You're way more contagious.
It doesn't matter.
You
carry it, and you don't know you have it.
All right, but like I said, you look at the decisions that were made bad.
Mm-hmm.
I've said this 3 days in a row now because I want to talk to you about the Fed here before we lose you. One of the ladies who listens to us from Ohio, believe it or not. She writes in, she said, I went to the hospital. She said, I'm listening to the show. I went to the hospital. She had some kind of, who knows, elective surgery. God knows, not my business. And she went in and they took my temperature and basically said, you're good to go. And she goes, I've been listening to you saying, by the time you have a temperature, it's too late. What's with these people?
Yeah.
I mean, I think we've had some incredibly poor decisions made in the medical community. Mm-hmm. I read this thing about German study 4 weeks ago, Russell, it says that you're the first 2 or 3 days you're 1,000 times more contagious than SARS. The minute you get a symptom, it starts to drop like off a rock. So when you have your worst,
that's too late.
My
wife went to the hospital via the ambulance on Sunday morning because she worked out and her heart rate would not come back down, so she had to go to the ER on Sunday. And they basically were dividing people up at the hospital that she went to between people that had any symptoms whatsoever, you went to the left, or people that didn't have any symptoms, right, and they went to the right. Went to the right.
I'm going
to
say that it's, knowing what we've known now for a month, that's that's horse bleep strategy.
Yep. That's why I'm not saying which hospital it was, because I don't want to throw them under the bus on that one, because I do think everybody's doing the best that they can. You know.
All right, so speaking of lines, Paul Harvey, page 2. We've had nothing but problems in the commercial paper market. We've had problems in the bond market. We've had problems in the municipal market. The Fed is printing money, and I read something the other day. I actually laughed out loud, Russell. It was 6 bazookas in the Fed's arsenal. And I'm going to say, and you can feel free, you don't mind disagreeing with me, they have one bazooka, and it's print more money. That's all they do. They just send it different directions.
That's about all they seem to have left.
Well, I'm not so sure that whatever
they have that left.
No, I'm saying. Well, speaking of lines, mm-hmm. when you go buy commercial paper because other people don't want it, and you go buy municipal bonds. I mean, Brendan was on Monday, 2 days ago, or actually last week, he was talking about it and said that it doesn't matter if you drive the municipal bond market down to 1%. None of your people that buy municipal bonds are going to buy that at 1%. No insurance company is going to lock up that kind of money for 20 years at 1% when they're paying people 3.5%. You can do whatever you want. There's no buyer there other than you, you idiot. What was the line in Hunt for Red October when a torpedo was coming and a guy goes, "You arrogant ass, you killed us." What I'm saying is, at some point here, the response to everything is not to print more dough. One of my listeners sent in, at the rate the Fed's going, in 22 months, they're going to own every piece of U.S. paper.
And, yeah.
But I'm saying...
We're going to be like Japan that owns, gigantic chunk of all their financial instruments.
Where is the line in the sand that says, you're no longer the U.S., you're the Weimar Republic?
It's funny you mention that, because I'm watching a YouTube series that a historian put together, where all he does is talk about different things that happened between the two wars. And I was in 1923 last night. I went from 23 to 25 last night. And this is when they started printing more and more money. The thing is, it didn't immediately turn into the hyperinflation.
What's about it did take
a little while. Well, that's you see where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Is it did take a little while. And you talk about how are we going to handle folks when we open things back up? How are we going to handle how's the Fed going to handle everything when business gets back to normal and try to avoid the pending inflation that we're going to get from the way that we've been publishing or printing money.
Well, classic monetary theory says 6 months.
This one is going to catch up with us, and it's going to catch up with us in probably, I'd say, 24 months.
Oh, classic theory says
6 months.
I'd be scared
to death in a couple of years. 2022, I'm going down on record right now, 2022 is going to make what we're experiencing right now look like child's play.
Well, what the bounce in the market we've had, mm-hmm. whether it's a bear market rally or the bottom's in, and I hope the bottom's in, but how much of it is just Fed money pouring in?
A bunch of it is. A bunch of it has been in one of two ways. What we've gotten in the equity markets over the last decade has really been a function of low interest rates and companies borrowing money and buying back shares.
Right.
They're not going to be able to, nobody's buying back their shares right now unless they're a big cash generator, and I can't really think of anybody that's, other than maybe Netflix right now,
Microsoft
is a big cash generator. Or maybe Amazon. They're probably doing okay in all of this.
Microsoft still has enough cash where they could probably get away with it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, Apple has a ton of cash.
Yeah.
They basically issued bonds versus the cash holdings outside of the U.S.
Well, I guess at some point when the Fed gets all this, what do they do? I mean, just
right now they're playing, and you want people at a place like the Fed to be playing the long game, but unfortunately we have no choice but to play the short game just to make us avoid from. You're worried about how people are behaving right now. Imagine how people would behave if they don't think a government check is coming.
Yeah.
You'd have three cars driving too fast on Lakeshore Drive and cutting you off and pushing you into the wall and beating the crap out of you and taking whatever they could take from you. You can criticize the Fed all over the place for what they're having to do, what they're doing right now. I just would love for them to have a plan coming out of this. I did feel like, and maybe I was ignorant, but I've always been a fan of Hank Paulson. I always felt like he had a longer term plan with what they were going to do. They were going to buy all the toxic assets and hold on to them till the economy strengthened once again. I felt like that was the plan. you could work it down a little bit or just not grow it as fast. I don't think there's a plan for after right now or even a thought for after we get out of this thing.
Well, I think one of the reasons in the Great Depression, whether they did it wrongly or rightly, that they didn't do the types of things we're doing now. Actually, they did try a bunch of different times to put more money.
They did. Oh yeah.
But they didn't have the inventory. There weren't the brands out there, and there weren't that kind of stuff.
It took longer for things to work themselves through the system.
But they also had this feeling that, what if we piss away all this money and it doesn't work? Now we're just broke and it didn't work. These guys, I mean, they have this vision, and boy, I sure hope they're right. That if we prop up all this stuff short term and don't let things go to a panic, then in 45 days we'll start to be coming around and we'll be okay. If you were to pin down Powell in this office in your chair when you're here and say, are you still going to be doing this in September if everything's the same way? He's going to say, I don't know about that. Right?
You know, the big issue.
We got to dash, Russell. We got to push this off till next week, buddy. SP Futures up 26. Be safe. Nasdaq Futures up 82. When you do come downtown, if some place is open, let's have a cup of coffee.
Absolutely.
All right, buddy. Take care.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.